Hello. Welcome to Let's Catch Up. I just want to start by saying that I, Megan Scott, host of Let's Catch Up, don't even know when and where I'll get my vaccine. It's over for Dr. Fauci. I'm over him. If you aren't aware, that was almost a direct quote of Meghan McCain on The View. She truly had the audacity to say, I'm the host of The View, and I don't even know when I'm going to get vaccinated. I'm sorry, your co-host is an EGOT winner. Like, if we're ranking pop culture people, Whoopi gets vaccinated before the vast majority of people, especially you, Meghan McCain. That's... I just feel like Cindy cannot be proud of her when she acts like that on national television. But anyway, apologies for missing last week. It just happens sometimes. Life, man. One woman show. I promise I'm going to make it up to you. This episode's going to be fully packed, a doozy. I'm ready to roll. In the midst of that, Lady Gaga's assistant was quite literally shot and her dogs were stolen. And I just feel like that's going to make that job posting a little difficult to fill. Maybe that guy will go back to his job, but like, who would even commit such a crime? I guess some people are saying that people have been nabbing French bulldogs in the area anyway, so it wasn't specifically because of Lady Gaga, but that man was shot. An aggressive opener, I know. But we're going to dig into a lot of things this week. Some new things being discovered in film and TV that I attempt to talk about, but I don't really know what I'm talking about, so that should be interesting. I'm going to do an almost offensive British accent discussing Harry and Meghan. My favorite part of my British accent is that it changes, and I know I'm doing different regions based on like my time watching Love Island, but I could not nail down which region I'm talking about. I think when I say babes, that's Essex, but that's all I know. New music we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about whether or not I'm going to keep buying Topshop, and we're obviously going to discuss the Golden Globes. I mean, okay. If you didn't watch it, congrats. I watched it so that you wouldn't have to. It was such a mess. But on that note, let's catch up. Okay, let's talk Golden Globes. I watched it. Kinda, barely. So you wouldn't have to, you know? What a mess. I'll be the one to say it. I love this stuff. I love award shows, but it's just so painful to watch in the middle of this, you know, global pandemic, 33% or whatever of women have left the workforce, like children are falling behind in school and babies have never met another baby because they've been trapped inside the whole time. And then they're like, and here's Jason Sudeikis in a hoodie. And I'm like, although that is oddly comforting, I just don't think it's exactly what we need. I think we can all agree that award shows that don't take themselves too seriously slash have music are the ones that we can enjoy during this time. Like, I think that looking back over the past year of award shows, multi-venue is not necessarily a bad thing. We've seen that work in the past, so that was not the Globes' downfall. I think their downfall was being old. Like, we saw the Emmys work, we saw the BET Awards work. There was another one that I didn't hate that just like was fun and not too serious and had some musical performances, and it really kept things moving. And I think the downfall of the Globes was that they were old. Like, I don't think I fully realized until leading up to this how much these awards are essentially bought and how they're voted on by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, which is a bunch of old people. It's 90 people. We learned that none of them were black. They all represent different countries. And y'all, I hate to be rude, but the man from Turkey, I think, that spoke during the presentation, I was like, he shouldn't be out of the house. He's clearly high risk. Like, so I'm a little confused. Like, did he watch Emily in Paris? No judgment if he did, but like, we don't need y'all to take this so seriously. We need to have a good time right now. So the news that was released prior to the actual award show was the news of no black voters being on the or part of the HFPA, and the fact that Netflix paid for all these journalists to take an all expenses paid trip to Paris for a quote set visit, and then like Emily in Paris gets nominated. So like, clearly these awards are being bought. I just don't think I realized that because I'm stupid. So acknowledging that there isn't much genuine care and thought behind the nominations made watching things easier for me, but also more embarrassing. So starting from the top, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler hosting. I love them together. They're bi-coastal, so Tina was in New York, Amy was in LA. They made jokes about that. They made jokes about the fact that Tina was like, I always knew my career would end with me walking around the Rainbow Room pretending to talk to Amy. It's very funny. She said Emily in Paris is nominated for comedy musical or whatever, and she was like, I can't wait to find out which one it is. Very funny. They acknowledged the fact that there were no black journalists and that it was a problem. Then they immediately pivoted to the HFPA doing a partnership with Feeding America for the night to so like you could donate. So it was like, we don't have a single black journalist representing any countries at all, but if you want to donate, please do. Here's the QR code. So we also know that Tina Fey is not the best at discussing or even acknowledging race. So we get into the awards right out of the gate. Like, we have a technological mishap right at the top with Daniel Kaluuya. And then I thought he wasn't going to get to speak at all. And poor Laura Dern had to be like, unfortunately, we have an issue. And then he was able to speak. I guess he was just muted. But his speech then ended up being quite moving. And so I was glad he did. Then we, John Boyega gets awarded for small acts. That felt like, hey, here's two black people in a row because we don't have any black journalists. Then Catherine O'Hara wins for Schitt's Creek, who, we know that I adore and I view as my queen. And then her husband did a bit where he played the like play out violin music for her during her speech on his phone. It was wonderful and hilarious. And she had a drink in her hand and she's spectacular. The interesting thing about Zoom award shows at this point is like, why are we dressing up? So like a lot of people are in these like super fancy extravagant gowns, but so you've got Jeff Daniels and Bill Murray who clearly do not care and are just there because they thought they had to be, and then they probably saw that Jodie Comer didn't show up and they were like, wait, that was an option. Jeff Daniels was like in a spare bedroom with just like a flannel on, and Bill Murray was in a Hawaiian shirt with like a martini in hand. They were living just like legendary old white men who don't want to get dressed up, but also like Chloe Zhao didn't dress up either, and I was like, wait, she gets it, this is the vibe. But a lot of like extravagant outfits, which I guess you just want to get dressed up. It's been a year. Keenan and Maya Rudolph did a bit that was completely unnecessary. I just need to go on the record saying like that's why these things are so long. There was absolutely no reason to do it, but I enjoyed it, so it's fine by me. Jason Sudeikis was so high. It was the craziest thing and like so painful, like so much secondhand embarrassment for me personally, is he's like trying to describe like all these deep thoughts. Like, I mean, he was literally just like this high guy in a sweatshirt, in a hoodie during an award show. And at one point, Don Cheadle motions to him to wrap it up. And Jason Sudeikis was like, Don is right. I need to wrap it up. And there, I'm very grateful for Don Cheadle. I really love him a lot. But there's a part of me that wonders how long they would have let it go on if Don had not stopped him. Because he clearly had no intentions of stopping. Like, he was just going to keep saying random things. But yeah, it was, that was enjoyable. I would take big money though to watch the five nominees all chat via Zoom. So at each commercial break, they would literally cut to like the nominees of all the next category or whatever, all on the same screen. So they would all talk to each other. And it was interesting to watch who did and who did not speak to one another. The comedy mid, including Jason Sudeikis and Don Cheadle and Ramin Youssef, were all making fun of Tracy Morgan accidentally saying Sal instead of Soul. Like, that was very funny. The drama women were fantastic because they were all showing off their pets, and it was Olivia Colman, Sarah Paulson, and they were genuinely excited for Emma Corrin to win when she did. So, like, that was enjoyable. Let the nominees present to each other via Zoom, maybe? Like, that they all interact together well? I don't know. I'm not mad at any of the presenters. It was, oh, I will say this. I forgot to write this down, but it was fascinating to watch which presenters the audience reacted to most. Because they were all first responders in both New York and LA. They were first responders, all masked, sitting in the Rainbow Room and the Beverly Hilton. And it was fascinating to hear who they were most excited for. The first time I noticed it was Sterling K. Brown and Susan Kelechi Watson from This Is Us. They started screaming. And then Jamie Lee Curtis, they also got really pumped for. And I was like, and Christopher Maloney. And I was like, okay, so just a reminder to, I guess, the people who normally run this show, the things that these people watch are This Is Us, like the things that normal people watch. This Is Us, Freaky Friday, I'm just kidding, like probably Halloween, and SVU. So like when Laura Dern came out, they clapped, but like I don't think that many people were like, "The lawyer from Marriage Story, let's go. I love Jurassic Park from 20 years ago," or whatever. That was just interesting to me. Moving on, let the nominees present to each other was my only point. The daughter of the man who won for Minari, give me 2 hours of that. It was so precious. She latched onto her father like a koala bear. I'm tearing up just thinking about it. It was cute as all get out. I need to watch that movie also, but you'll know if I find out that's $20 on Amazon Prime. I'll just add it to my list. But congrats to Sacha Baron Cohen, I guess. I guess I need to watch that as well. Borat's subsequent movie film. Trial of Chicago 7 won a lot, which y'all know that I weirdly enjoyed that film. And the Jane Fonda tribute and Norman Lear. Oh my God, so precious. The Jane Fonda tribute sent chills down my spine. It was incredible. She's such a legend. We are so lucky to get to live at the same time as her and Norman Lear, quite frankly. At least they got those two things right. Fun tributes for old people. Good at the Golden Globes. My first question is drama, isn't it? I'm sorry. I won't stop though. So obviously there's a lot going on with Meghan Markle and Harry, whatever their last name is. What is it? Windsor, Mountbatten, Mountbatten, Windsor? I mean, it's just so much. Anyway, so let's kind of try and do the timeline because I didn't talk about their pregnancy announcement last week, and I'm glad I didn't because now there's so much happening. I mean, obviously, the tea. Cheerio. You know what? I'm not even gonna say sorry because I'm not sorry for making a tea joke when I'm talking about the royal family. It's incredible. Anyway, quick background. So January of 2020 is when Meghan and Harry first say that they're going to step back and want to work on some private endeavors, and in doing so, they have to stop using the word royal when they give their pitch to Netflix or whatever. In March of 2020, they settle into California just in time for a global pandemic and establish with the royal family that they'll do an evaluation in a year regarding their status within the royal family. Then you flash forward to this year, February 14th, 2021, they announce that they are having a second child on Valentine's Day. Within the announcement, they still call themselves the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, and I keep getting confused because they can't use the royal, like, I don't know, I don't understand that. But it seems like this is when things start to hit the fan, more so than they already had, I guess. 5 days later, the Queen confirms that they won't return to royal roles. They release a statement, the Queen releases a statement separately saying that they will not hold royal patronages. Harry's military appointments will be returned, which, full disclosure, I don't understand what that means because, like, you can't return your service. So I clearly don't know what appointments are, military appointments are. That is what is rumored to be the thing that he's most upset by. Some of the articles that I read have basically said that they were hoping that they could do like a 50-50 situation, which like I don't fully understand, but I guess they thought they could continue their work through the crown but live in California and make a podcast, which like honestly when I say it out loud, same, like I would also like to attend fancy events in London but like make a podcast in LA and hang out with Oprah. So Harry and Meghan's statement was like, "We were still devoted to service. Service is universal," which is like nice of them, I guess. I don't know. The service of Netflix and Apple Podcasts, because the cost of security ain't cheap. Because that was the whole thing. Remember when it like first happened that like they had used like I guess British taxpayer money to like redo their cottage in Kensington. I'm using words, but I don't know if they're correct. But then they had to pay all that money back, and now that they live in, is it Montecito where they live? They have had to pay out of pocket for like security. And honestly, we should probably all be watching Suits, so she's getting some residual checks, security and they had to like repay all of the cost of redoing the house. So, moving on, we get into the real and upcoming drama now as a result of them leaving. So it was announced that Meghan and Harry would be doing a sit down with Oprah, who attended their wedding. Not that you need a reason to pick Oprah, but I figured it was worth noting. And then after that was announced, and we were all like, "Ooh, drama in it. All right, babes." The Queen announced that she will be giving her annual Commonwealth Day broadcast that I'm obviously very familiar with, also on March 7th, same day as the Oprah interview, which has led plenty of people to believe that we have got a competition brewing. I would absolutely love if Charles was just like hustling in the castle from one TV to another to catch his mother on one and his son on the other. JK, they won't be airing simultaneously in the UK because the Harry Meghan interview with Oprah is on CBS at 8 p.m., which I guess I have to watch live, which I hate that. And then the belief is that I guess the Queen's thing will be earlier in the same day, in from, presumably a castle or something. Her husband is knock knock knocking, on you know what's door. Sorry, maybe he's fine, but I don't think he is. Okay, so the interview with Meghan and Oprah, it's apparently going to be starting to talk about motherhood and marriage, and then Harry will join them and talk about moving to the US. So it should be interesting. Will he drag his own brother? Lot of questions just like within this one, but drama in it question mark was what I felt best summed it up. But chip chip cheerio. I constantly sound like I'm in Mary Poppins. Like it's either Mary Poppins or Love Island when I'm doing a British accent. And I guess none of it is appropriate for The Crown, which I still have not finished because season 3 was boring. Okay, I have tried and tried to take notes and to figure this fully out, but I wanted to make sure that I talked about Paramount Plus. Because this is what CBS All Access is becoming. So, CBS All Access, if you didn't already pay for it, good for you. You know me, I love a CBS crime drama and I can't help myself. But it has switched over to Paramount Plus, obviously being owned by the broader studio, and there's a lot going on there. So, they're going to have live sports, NFL games, other things. They're going to stream local CBS affiliates, and then they're also going to have all of your normal like CBS shows or whatever. But there's going to be reboots and things like that. It definitely feels like Peacock, right? Except Peacock is free unless you want to pay for it to watch Saved by the Bell and then cancel your subscription, not speaking from experience or anything. But Paramount Plus does have like the live aspect. I did try and see if you could watch the Golden Globes on Peacock on Sunday night, and you couldn't. So it does seem like that's something that Paramount Plus will have going for it. But they also have, they're going to do a reboot of Frasier, reboot of Reno 911. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I was reading an interesting article about streaming services because obviously most people have Netflix, and there's apparently a subscription analytics startup. It's called Antenna, in case you were wondering. And they did research and they say that US consumers are subscribed to just 1.5 streaming services as of January of this year. So the assumption here is that it's like Netflix and maybe something else. And then they further went into the discussion of people who subscribe to Netflix and then keep it, and the numbers are pretty high. And the same goes for like Hulu and Disney Plus. I feel like if you sign up for Disney Plus, you've probably committed to it. But there was a really interesting drop for some other streaming services, Apple TV Plus being the one that experienced like the most dramatic drop. The people who had it at the beginning of 2020, only like a little over 30% of those people had it by the end of the month or end of the year, sorry, rather, as opposed to Netflix, which goes from like 100% to like 75%. So, the point of me regurgitating data like that is to say, it's interesting that people continue to crank out streaming services, knowing that people probably are not going to subscribe to all of them. I think the only way that these things will continue to work is if people do things like what NBC did, which is pull The Office from Netflix, right? So if Netflix, you start pulling all the things that we all binge watch from Netflix, even though they are cranking out so much of their own content, will we continue to subscribe to a Netflix, to a Hulu, obviously not to an Apple TV, to HBO, whatever. So I'll keep you guys updated on Paramount Plus because I paid for CBS All Access. It does automatically transition over. So if you already pay for CBS All Access, just know the app will change. Like the visual aspects of the app will change, but you'll just now have access to the challenge on MTV, which is a thrill for me personally. I think I also get access to BET now, so I'm gonna watch First Wives Club with Michelle Buteau. Okay, my first question this week honestly leaves me with more questions than answers, but I'm obsessed with this story and I'm curious to know if we could all be doing better if our parents were vice presidents at Nike. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. If you haven't, here's the gist. A woman by the name of Ann Herbert, or perhaps a bear, I don't know, had to step down from her VP position at Nike because a Bloomberg article was released and connected her 19-year-old son's resale business to her. So this woman spent 25 years at Nike, invested all this time. She worked really hard. She was promoted to vice president last year. And I'm going to be the one to say it. Her son ruined it for her. And I hate to be dramatic, but if his body turns up, I don't think we can blame her. That's not at all the case. Once I read more into it, I was like, weirdly, it seems like she was okay with it. And they were like, it wasn't a secret. They were like, not partnering together, but she like brought it to Nike. Anyway, it doesn't seem like once you get into the details, the mother explicitly did anything wrong, except she definitely knew about the resale business, supported him, which is certainly what we want mothers to do. But Nike even knew about the business as recently as 2018, and they did an investigation and concluded that there wasn't anything inappropriate going on. So it appears that he was a quote major player in the resale game. I don't know what I'm talking about, but he had a whole website. If you see any of the pictures of this kid, he's sitting in front of just like hundreds and hundreds of boxes of shoes, stacks and stacks of them. And it's weird to me because I feel like in some way he's directly cannibalizing his mother's business. So I was confused about that, but I guess him and his friends literally like drive all over the country. They go to Nike outlets, they buy up these shoes, and then they resell them. Reselling sneakers, that whole business is something that I do not understand. I know that it is a huge market, but I just don't know anything about it. But his mother was literally promoted to a VP like position last summer, so not even a full year. And this kid is rumored to, I like don't fully understand this. I was trying to figure out if he was making $200,000 a month or he was, it said he was clearing $200,000 worth of revenue. So I don't like, is that $200,000? Like, revenue is what confused me. Because if he's okay, sorry, I'm still trying to work it out clearly. But that was prior to March. Maybe they don't need Mama's VP salary after all. I don't know. The company, his resale business is called West Coast Streetwear. I didn't even know that if you had a resale business, you needed it to be like registered as an LLC and like have a full company name. But he had a credit card that he was buying these like Yeezys with. That was under his mother's name, but for West Coast Streetwear. So, like, she got, like, it was a very involved process. But considering how much money he was making, like, if my mom was a VP at Nike, maybe I would do the same thing. All of the articles basically say that he wasn't circumventing the process because his mom was a VP at Nike, but I have to assume that he knows more than we do, right? My question, honestly, is like, no one gets to keep their job now. Because his website is all the products been taken down, so like what are why did we think the Bloomberg article was a good idea? Like we had to assume that someone was gonna trace it back and be like, this is kind of fishy. So now mom doesn't have a job, the son's website is down. I'm le again, more questions than answers. I do feel like I should reach out to him and see if he can get me a pair of like platform low top white Air Force Ones. Maybe? I don't know. Just like very strange, right? And kind of sad. I don't know if it's a con. I don't think it is. I don't think it's a scam. I just think it's like kind of strange. But if I was the VP at Nike after working there for 25 years and my son did something that made me resign, I would be furious. Absolutely furious with him. And he's 19, so like he has to go to college now. Because I'm sure that he wasn't, because he was just selling these shoes and making so much money. But now that this website is down, like, you need to go to UCLA or Oregon, I guess, since she works for Nike, right? Or UW, I don't know. question is probably a little rude considering this is a huge conglomeration that has truly gotten us through this pandemic, and I shouldn't be asking them not nice things because they're working really hard to provide us with a large breadth of content. However, the large breadth starts to make you wonder, is Netflix not giving us their best? I know, controversial. Netflix is obviously providing us with so much all the time to get us through this pandemic that we have lived through, thankfully, however, insanely, for a year. I watched a lot of things on Netflix. I started a lot of things and didn't finish them. I'm going to talk about them because I do feel like there was a weird theme in the past month of like getting on Netflix and being like, okay, the only thing that I want to watch here is that Finding Ohana movie and like not even the To All the Boys third movie. I know I need to finish it because I just need to like end it, but like why do I hate Peter Kavinsky now? Okay, that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to first of all talk about I Care a Lot, which I kept accidentally calling I Don't Care because those are the vibes. This is the movie with like it's like a full-on scam, a con, which we know I love. And then this cast is like top-tier white people. It's Rosamund Pike. It's Peter Dinklage. It's Chris Messina. It's Diane Weiss, I think is how you pronounce her name. Like, top tier. So I'm like, okay, we're gonna get ourselves quite a scam, quite a con. Like, we've got looks on looks on looks, right? The styling in this movie, impeccable. I'm here for it. The third act was so painful. So out of nowhere, it made me sad because I was watching the movie and I knew that it was not an excellent movie, but I was genuinely enjoying it and where it was going. It was twisty, it was turny. I was into it. I was like, this is different. Scamming and conning old people, you know, we know that this happens, but like we need to talk about it more. And then by the third act, I was like, okay, wait, why did this feel like something that like kind of sort of could happen? And then it turned, I don't know. It was just like, it made me sad, but I was weirdly content with the way it ended. I won't even lie. So if you watch it, you know, let me know. But then Rosamund Pike won a Golden Globe for it, and I kind of adore her, but like, I don't know. Netflix is just like taking our money and they're giving it to the Hollywood Foreign Press. I think that's what we're learning here. The Netflix, I'm struggling. The next thing on the list of Netflix, what's happening is this show, Jenny in Georgia. If you watched the whole thing and loved it, no shade. Seriously. You know that I'm not above someone knowingly consuming lowbrow garbage. I talk about Love Island constantly. That is not what this is about. But I got about 15 minutes into the show before deciding it's just not for me. For a variety of reasons, I'm sure some of y'all have heard some of them by now. It just like, okay, let's do it. The major news that I didn't even get to in the show was the Taylor Swift drama. So there's a line at some point in some episode, I don't even know. That one of the girls implies that her friend is going through men, quote, faster than Taylor Swift. Obviously sexist, obviously stupid, but I would like to point out that it's an out-of-date reference for teenagers to be making, right? Like these girls in the show are 15, and Taylor's been in a relationship for what, like 2 years, maybe more? So beyond the internalized misogyny of these two white women, and it's important that you know that they're white for later, who wrote this show, they also forgot that the time period that they're referring to in regards to Taylor Swift, quote, dating a lot or whatever, was when these characters would be like 10. So do they even know? I don't know. I know that these kids like know way more about the internet than we ever did, but so there's a lot of drama, and I was Googling for reviews after reading or watching the first 15 minutes because at bare minimum I just wanted to find one written by a black woman, and I couldn't. I should have done it earlier, clearly, because I couldn't find anything because everything was like Taylor Swift snaps back at Jenny in Georgia. And I was just like, okay, I understand what she's saying and I totally agree with it. However, you know how I feel about Taylor Swift, and I have to point out something. Taylor is definitely that friend who polices all of your friends. Because in her statement, not only was she just like, this is a gross, stupid joke, she was like, which, do you think she was watching the show and heard about it, or do you think someone sent a screenshot to her? I need to know that. Was she watching the show? But her statement was like, Netflix, after Miss Americana, I would have assumed you'd be better than this. Like, being like, hey, Netflix, you produced my documentary. Why are you allowing this silly Gilmore Girls crime spinoff to say things about me? It's like, okay. Two reasons. One, they're too big to care. Okay, we have to acknowledge that. They are not policing every word that is being put on the platform. I know that for a fact because I know that these huge showrunners who are writing, who have deals with Netflix, the Ryan Murphys, the Shonda Rhimes, all of them are going to Netflix because Netflix does not require them to turn in scripts prior to production. So they are able to fully flesh out these shows without like any sort of hovering of a company. So I can almost promise you that they never saw the script of Jenny in Georgia. But the second thing is that if anyone did, no alarm bells went off because our society is sexist. And I thought that you knew that. So there's that. That's the whole drama there. But then the next thing that was already weird for me 15 minutes in, and I know other people thought it was weird because I got on Twitter before I ever watched the show, and people were calling out like the racial element to the story. Okay, it's weird. It's weird. So Jenny is George's daughter. They're 15 years apart. Again, it's supposed to be like a Gilmore Girls vibe. They even nod to Gilmore Girls. Like in the 15 minutes that I watched, they acknowledged it. Jenny is a little mixed girl. Squad roll up. Her father is black. He's not immediately in the picture when we meet them. She does call a man dad on the phone during the 15 minutes that I watched. So maybe he's around somewhere, but we don't love the fact that two white women wrote a show where, like, this child has a black father and he's not around. It's not a great stereotype for two white women to be perpetuating, especially because, and I'm willing to be corrected here, but I assume that they made her character mixed as an effort to be more like woo-woo diverse, so no one could call them Chris Harrison, right? They like wrote the show and then they were like, and we'll make her daughter biracial. Yes, and we'll talk about yes, and we'll talk about race, right? The key to diversity, knock knock, Chris Harrison, is that it has to be in front of and behind the camera, right? Because now you have a mixed girl who apparently is trying to deal with being the only black kid in a town in Massachusetts, which like, okay, she at one point very early on is like, I guess we're not leaving racism in the South. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Did your mom not tell you about Massachusetts? What? Like, she asks her mom when a cop rolls up at the very beginning of the show. She's like, that was racist, right? Like, sweetie, your mom doesn't know. And it's weird that these white women made you ask her. But the scene that simultaneously piqued my interest and disturbed me that was on Twitter was that this little mixed girl and her, like, hot but distant neighbor boy, who's both Asian and white, have this weird, like, oppression off where they yell stereotypes at each other. And it was maybe 30 or 40 seconds. And I listened to the whole thing on Twitter and I was like, I don't know a lot, but I've never been in a room with other minorities and been like, you know what we should do right now? Yell at each other about whether or not we're good enough minorities in white spaces that we occupy. Because that doesn't help anyone. But maybe white people, I don't know. So. They're yelling at each other, and this boy yells at this little girl that he's, quote, never seen her demolish some jerk chicken. And y'all, I just didn't, didn't know if these white women that wrote this show didn't know that the stereotype was fried chicken. It was filmed in Canada. So maybe it's a different stereotype in Canada. Maybe I'm just being ignorant. I just thought about that, but I don't think that's what it is. I just didn't know if they didn't know that the stereotype was fried chicken, or if they were too scared to write fried chicken because they didn't want to be accused of being racist, which would lead you to the question, why write the scene at all? I know we all are struggling, right? Netflix is the almighty, the juggernaut, and if they're struggling to pump out good content and that is also meaningful, like, I should give them a break. If you know of anything that I am just straight up not getting promoted to me on my, listen, if y'all saw the front page of my Netflix, you'd probably be like, well, yeah, that's why you keep getting Garbage Wagon, because that's what you're consuming. I tried the Cecil Hotel thing, honestly, freaked me out more than any true crime thing because it was just like a woman alone who just disappeared. I don't like it. I like Murder on Middle Beach. I like cults. Do you guys see the SNL? That was so funny, the little song with Nick Jonas about murder shows, and then Nick Jonas started singing about cult shows. It was very. The SNL has really been pumping out the songs lately. Like, can they release an album? I would listen to them on Spotify. Loco really had me, like, it just really spoke to my soul. I started the Mormon murder thing on Netflix, so I'll let you guys know if that's any good. But please tell me if there's something better than me just watching Good Girls, which is very good. But help, Netflix. Are you guys okay? Do you need help? When are those Shonda shows gonna keep pumping out? That's what we really need to know. Okay, this is my last question. I told you guys this episode was going to be a doozy, and I understand that it's insane. But I just really quickly want to bring to everyone's attention and ask, do we want to be on the Azealia Banks list of people she loves or not? I think the answer is not, but I need to read them because she posted this past week. Basically, she was like, I need to be less of a hater, and here are some of the people that I love. And although I can personally relate to the concept of hating everything and everyone and needing to be conscious of the people and things that I love, I need y'all to see this list or at least hear about it because it's absolutely wild. Keep in mind, I do not actually follow her because I think the general consensus is that following her is painful. But I saw the Northwest parody account post about it because Northwest is on the list. So she posted this list, I think 3 or 4 days ago. And at the top it says love list with like a little flower. And I mean, it very much looks like something we would have like done in middle school. And you like pass this around to all your friends and they write like people that you love. And then it ends up getting like located or found by like a teacher and you all get called to the principal's office because you were being mean. But you were actually just saying people that you would love, but you intentionally left people off. Anyway. So she starts her love list with Bianca with a bunch of hearts around it. And then the next three people are Mike Tyson, Lenny Kravitz, and Donald Trump. I mean, that is a chaotic trio. And I have a strange feeling that Lenny Kravitz doesn't necessarily want to be there. So if we keep going, we've got Ella Fitzgerald, Shakira, Toni Braxton. I'm really skipping around. Dennis Rodman, Winona Ryder, Wilderness Cooking Guy. I'm assuming she means the guy on TikTok, which I love him too, but I do think it's interesting that she doesn't know his name. It's Larry David, Candace Owens, Omarosa, Chaka Khan, Northwest, Queen Sheba. Now, I might be missing something culturally, and there might be a Queen Sheba, or it's the Queen of Sheba. And then right in the middle of the page, it says Lil' Kim in bigger font than everyone, and it has a heart around it. Latwan Banks, Dave Chappelle, Naomi Campbell, Boy George, Macy Gray, Donald Glover, let's see, DMX, Vladimir Putin. Amber Rose, Cher, Britney Spears, Karl Lagerfeld, Brian McKnight, Brian Wilson, Iggy Pop, Jill Scott, Audra McDonald. That's fair. Whitney Houston. And then the very last name on the list is Azealia Banks with little lines drawn around it, which I'm glad she loves herself. That's important. But I just wanted to read that because at times, this list makes you think, I should be there. And at other times, it makes you grateful that you're not on it. But I do know that Northwest was a little troubled that she was on it. But someone commented and was like, not the greatest rapper of all time. And I don't even know who they were referencing, to be honest. But Azealia commented back and said, Northwest is the greatest rapper of all time. So there's that. We don't know if she's the greatest rapper of all time, but we do know she's the greatest painter of all time. Okay, quick question, and I'm kind of embarrassed because I missed Topshop being bought by ASOS, and it was a whole scandal. So now we have to keep an eye out. And I think the question is like, does this ruin Topshop's brand, or was Topshop's brand already ruined by the man that was a wreck and had tax scandals that I'm not rich enough to understand, and sexual misconduct, and as always some racist stuff just sprinkled on top. Or is this going to fully dilute the brand? I'm curious. Topshop really felt like a democratized fashion moment more so than like an H&M, right? It was definitely like a higher echelon of style For me, anything European, I'm in, plus collaborations with Beyonce and Kate Moss, very much into it. I ironically have a love-hate relationship with ASOS due to sizing, but now that they've acquired Topshop and the other brands within that umbrella, so it's like Miss Selfridges and like three or four others that I can't even remember. They right out of the gate were running like a 25% promo, and I was like, it's over, sorry. And I was like, okay, maybe I could get into this lifestyle if we're always gonna have like Topshop with promo codes because we'll see. I don't know if this will elevate ASOS's business or if this is gonna be. I feel like they innately will cannibalize one another, right? Like, I feel like you go to both of those places looking for similar things. So now that they are within the same vein, you're not gonna buy both. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. But I think we should keep an eye out. A lot of questions. Have mercy on the souls of the people that got all of the new product information up on the site and discounted like that. God be with them. Do we think that Ivy Park will go back to a Topshop partnership now that that racist man is gone and they're at ASOS? That's curious. Or does ASOS already carry it? Maybe they do. I know Nordstrom does. But we'll see. Only time will tell. XOXO. ASOS. Okay, I'd like to say that in this section of what are we watching, listening, paying attention to, I love Ariana Grande. I genuinely think she is so talented. She's been through so much. I adore her music. The pace at which she is, just propelling out albums is crazy. Surely it cannot be maintained, but I really do love her so much. That being said, I'd love to quickly read you the definition of deluxe. It is an adjective, luxurious or sumptuous, of a superior kind. Yeah. So, Positions Deluxe was released last week, the day that this podcast came out, so I could not talk about it until this week. I was very excited. Now, I think that I was confused, if I'm just being completely honest, because every time she would post the track list for Positions Deluxe, I have very poor vision and the font was very small. And also, she has very poor vision too. We've all seen her try and do the wheel of whatever impressions and stuff like that on Fallon. She can't see. I can't see either. It's looked to me like there were a lot of new songs. There are not. And so I was disappointed. So it's my own fault because I thought there was going to be a lot more. So on the 19th, she released Positions Deluxe. It has all 14 tracks from the original album, then the 34-35 remix with Meg Thee Stallion and Doja Cat, which I have mixed feelings about because I could listen to Meg all day, truly, but it's just like, I think it's like a different song. You know what I don't even consider it a remix. It seems like a different song. Anyway, so then there's four unreleased songs added to the deluxe, which is Someone Like You, Interlude, Test Drive, Worst Behavior, Main Thing. None of these have moved me incredibly deeply. Someone Like You, the U is spelled with just a U. Fine. Test Drive, bad time to come out with a song about driving, honestly, because you can't overtake driver's license. It's obviously not about driving. Worst Behavior, Main Thing. The reality is when I listen to this album, the first song is Shut Up, and I always just get like very into that, and I have a hard time moving past it. So yes, we have a deluxe album, I guess. At the end of the day, I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm just gonna go listen to Hotels. Jasmine Sullivan really has me like in my feelings, and that's kind of where I'm at. And I feel really bad because, like I said, I love Ariana. Okay, so in addition to Ariana's album, we have a lot of new music that's basically coming out in tandem with my not in tandem with this podcast. I wish in synchronicity, I feel like is a better word at the same time as this podcast. This episode is dropping on Friday, so it's a bunch of new music. That's what I'm trying to say. I wish this music was coming out with my podcast. Anyway, so the first is going to be this Silk Sonic, which is Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak, and they are doing like a little joint album situation. I feel like this is going to be a real moment. I'm very excited about it. I don't know if there are any teasers on the internet or if I've just completely missed them, but they've worked together 4 years and reportedly have worked on this material previously, so it's not just like the result of the pandemic, it doesn't seem like. So that's kind of exciting because it at least it doesn't feel like it's like under the pressure of like people were just trapped. It kind of just feels like they were in lockdown and they were like, we should probably finish that thing we were working on. So that's something exciting to look forward to. Other new things. Nick Jonas has some new singles. I am not mad at the music. I'm never mad at Nick. I love him so much. He was such an important part of my teenage years. But I need to talk about the album art because it is confusing a little bit because I do feel like I don't know if it was the director or like there was an art director on set or a creative director or what, but somebody was trying really hard to make it artsier than it needed to be because he's Nick Jonas, you know? So I don't really know about that. Also, Spaceman, one of the songs that he just released that he performed on SNL. When I was listening to it on SNL, I was like, Nick, baby, are you okay? It is a depressing song about life the past year. And I'm confused because it doesn't seem to be billed as a song about COVID or about 2020. It's just like, this is a song called Spaceman. But like in 5 years, if we try to listen to this, like I listened to Chains, we're going to get PTSD from lines like, mask off when I get home. I'm only safe when I'm alone. Like, has anyone called Priyanka? They aren't living together currently, are they? Like, I'm very confused. Where are all those dogs? I don't know. But I did love that Kevin went and saw him at SNL. That was sweet. Kevin was like, we're still a band, right? Because I just bought a new house, which was very funny. And then we also have new Drake music dropping as this podcast is being released. We talked about it. We just decided it'd be best if we just like went ahead and did it simultaneously. It'd be best for both of us. Just kidding. Drake really does get me in that State Farm commercial, though. I always forget that he's actually funny. But yeah, so we'll definitely be talking about that next week. We'll see how we feel about it. I don't know. Remember when everyone hated Views? I didn't. I don't know. He just really can't do that much wrong by me. So we'll definitely be discussing next week in depth both Silk Sonic and I know that Drake released the, he said whatever the title of the song or the album or whatever it is called, but I don't remember it. I'll talk about it next week, I promise. But we're keeping an eye out. We're keeping an ear out. Okay, so I'm going to link to Martha Stewart's Harper's Bazaar article or interview in the show notes because I need everyone to read it because it's such a whirlwind between like the photos of her face not moving and the fact that she's like, I don't know, sometimes men just talk about sex at the dinner table to her being like, if I call you on a Sunday, I need you to be able to answer. Like, I simultaneously was like rooting for her, but also was like, oh, got it, I'd never work for her. It's very interesting. So, like I said, the pictures themselves are worth a look because she does not look remotely 79. She does not dress. I mean, she has a stylist, obviously, and for this article, her outfits are fire. She looks incredible. It was very interesting. I'm not like a huge Martha Stewart fan. I don't like white lady lifestyle is not mine, you know, like her and Gwyneth, whatever. But it was interesting to read about her because she spares no opinion, no thought. She talks about, I know she's spoken about Gwyneth before, but that quote is used in this article as well as some things she said about Rachael Ray. She really was a pioneer in this like lifestyle cookbook, clean living life, you know, vibe, whatever. But apparently she worked on Wall Street, which I did not know, and she said that she wore hot pants, which is weird. But the bits and pieces about the article, like there's a discussion about like, oh, she's saying that like women in her generation just knew that men were like would harass them and you just had to like brush it off. And I'm like, that's there's like something very upsetting to me about like women from a certain generation being like, well, we just brushed it off, so you should too. It's like, don't you want better for generations that like come after you? I don't know. That's weird. She talks about her jail time, or not her jail time specifically, but a little bit about it around that time. She talks about her friendship with Snoop, which I love. And they just like really do love each other. I think it's so sweet. Weirdly enough, she also, Tiffany Haddish, was like, I love Martha. Like, I email her all the time. I ask her questions all the time, which I love a world where Martha Stewart is like Tiffany Haddish's life coach. It's really important to me. But yeah, it's an interesting article. She talks about her CBD gummies. I guess she doesn't smoke. common misconception because of her close friendship with Snoop and their TV show together, but she says she's not. But it was an interesting read. Like I said, I'll put it in the show notes, because I guess we should all be paying attention to Martha Stewart, despite the fact that she is on the cusp of 80. Okay, last thing that we are paying attention to and looking out for is actually two things that I just wanted to talk about together. Projects and companies being launched by absolutely iconic women and what they're working to do. So I think it's worth noting that I obviously don't really know what I'm talking about, and I just had to read a bunch of things to learn about these companies. But that's what we're out here doing, right? Is we're reading and we're learning in 2021, okay? We're gathering information. Or I'm reading and learning, and then I'm regurgitating it into your ears while you grocery shop. And you're welcome. Anyway, first up, we're going to talk about Together, which is spelled with an X instead of an E. The second E, because there's two E's together. Together. It's founded by four women who I so desperately want to be and be friends with and just be near if I get the chance. Sue Bird, Alex Morgan, Simone Manuel, who I've been obsessed with this since the Olympics, but then I had to remember that she's in college so I can let her live outside the spotlight, you know, and Chloe Kim. They have launched this media and commerce company that they are saying is intentionally aimed towards millennial and Gen Z women, and it's attempting to focus attention on women in sports and in the media. Very cool. Obviously, we know that women's sports never get their due. Obviously, women like Sue Bird and Alex Morgan have been playing their respective sports for a very long time and are well aware. I once spent a significant period of time in high school arguing over the cost of University of Georgia football tickets versus University of Georgia gymnastics tickets after the school won its 10th national title in gymnastics and its 5th consecutively, and the football team was consistently losing big games. So, you could go to a gymnastics meet for $15, and that's how much the drink costs at a football game. I won't get heated about it again. I will not get heated about it again. But you could say that that is some of the reasoning behind this media company, the fact that there is a lack of visibility and as a result, a lack of financial backing, things like that. It all impacts each other, right? I don't know what I'm talking about. Women's sports do get apparently 2 to 4% of the coverage. Of all sports coverage, 2 to 4% is women. Men dominate the rest. Let's make something clear also. I don't hate men. I love men's sports. I love men's sports. But I also think that UCLA gymnastics is fire, and I think that Penn State women's volleyball is incredible, and I shouldn't have to dig for information about them. Now, I know some of you are going to say, Megan, I looked at who you follow on Instagram, and you follow, you know, Travis Kelce, but you don't follow any gymnasts at UCLA. And to that, I would say you are not wrong, and I'm part of the problem. The U.S. Women's national soccer team should not have had to fight so vehemently to be paid the same as the men when they were constantly crushing the competition all over the world, over and over again. So I'm excited for this, clearly. The first project that they're releasing is called Phenom, and it's a docuseries about a 17-year-old girl who's a boxer and wants to make it to the Olympics. So we'll see what all is to come. I'm very excited about it. It's very cool. Also, they had a photo shoot for their launch, and they all looked bomb. The next very cool thing is from the icon and legend herself, Miss Ava DuVernay. Worth noting that I don't know anything about film and television, so I'll do my best to explain this based on the research that I did and the fact that so many celebrities tweeted about it that I was like, I need to dig a little deeper. So it's called Array Crew, and it's a database that's attempting to diversify and I also think equalize a bit Hollywood. I think we all know that that industry in particular, as well as plenty of other industries, can be exclusive and all about who you know. So this is an attempt at being able to curate and cultivate the crew behind the scenes to be more reflective of our world and also provide opportunities to incredibly talented people who just may not have the connections or the money or the skin color that would have previously gotten them through the door. So the way this database works is it's completely free if you're a crew member and you just have to have at least one credit, which, like, I don't really know a lot, but I feel like you could get, right? That was stupid. I shouldn't have said that. Keep reading your notes. And then you're visible to all of these production companies once you register on Array Crew. All of these production companies and streaming services have committed to using the platform and they're financially invested. So they have to pay to use Array, but you as like a set designer in Atlanta, don't have to pay. It very much feels like Hollywood, but like LinkedIn, but like with maybe less people trying to inspire you, you know? Have you been on LinkedIn recently? It is just like an echo chamber for people trying to tell you what to do with your life. It's horrible. But like I said, the studios, the streaming platforms are paying for this, so it'll always be free for the people who are looking for jobs, and you would assume that Netflix or Paramount Plus or whoever would be incentivized to look on Array for hiring people because they're paying for it. So I'm excited to see how this develops because the hope is that stories and experiences expand, right? As we take in more points of view and life experiences and yada, 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 you know the drill. So, Ava also made a really good point in an interview with NPR where she compared Hollywood to high school and she was basically like, you sit with your friends at lunch because you know them, right? And like Hollywood, all work is like that, right? You know the quality of people's work and you've had success with them before, and so you sit with them again. And I thought that was a great point. No one is shaming Greta Gerwig and Saoirse Ronan for working together countless times, but it's worth asking, is there someone else who could benefit from this work, and what might their impact be on your work because of their story and their life experience? So, pretty cool things women are building, and I'm just here reading about it and reporting it back to you. Wow. I mean, thank you for making it this far this week more than any other, right? I told you it was going to be a doozy, but I wanted to make it up to you guys for missing a week. And thankfully, there was a lot to talk about, and people are doing really great things and really silly things. And like, that is the intersection that we live at. So we want to talk about people who are doing really phenomenal things, like Array Crew and Together and Meghan Markle speaking out against the crown. Yeah, but we also want to talk about really silly things like people reselling tennis shoes, even though their mom is a VP at Nike, and people wearing gowns at home while they don't receive awards because their streaming service just paid for them to get nominated. They were never actually going to win. Other silly things, Scott Disick dyeing his hair pink. I love him so much, but what is he going through, okay? Really quickly before we go, I do want to also discuss all of the active and loungewear lines coming out from brands who don't normally do that sort of thing. Marquesa, Banana Republic, I'm getting a lot of ads. I guess we're not wearing pants for at least another 6 months, but it's an interesting investment nonetheless. I also understand like production times and design, like all these things make sense to me why they're just now coming out with them, but it's still an interesting decision. I also am going to go watch the Billie Eilish documentary. So I've seen her live twice, which I don't think is on brand for me, but I don't hate it. She's so talented. So I hope that the documentary is entertaining. I'll talk about it next week if it is. And if it isn't, I may never speak of it again. I'm also going to go quickly DM Chris Evans and see if he'd be willing to discuss the use of the Nicki Minaj song Yikes in his most recent film announcement. Like, surely he doesn't listen to that song, right? Like, if he does, I will pass out because it is such a good song. But him and Alfre Woodard and Billy Bob Thornton and their Ryan Gosling. And so Chris Evans posted about it, and he posted the audio of Yikes, the part where Nicki goes, "It's quiet, ain't no back talk," which I love. But like, is that what Chris Evans is listening to when he's like getting pumped for Captain America? I have so many questions. If I have any success there, I'll let you guys know, but I feel like I'll probably just end up getting blocked. But no worries, I'll just DM him from the a starting point Instagram instead. Okay, thanks for catching up. Bye.